Okay, back. So we're going to get started here. It's a great schus to be able to hear from two amazing mechanchim who I have the unique pleasure to have personal sharing with both of them to my contacts. They're both very, very insightful, and we have a lot to glean from both of them in many areas, not just this area alone, but it's a great Pesach for those who don't know them yet, and a great deepening for those who already do. We're going to be speaking about social media as pros and cons, the way that we can interact with it as Jews and as productive people, both, I guess, as two separate questions and as one question. So the way that it's structured is to be pretty much like a debate, as if you were on debate team. I never did debate team, so I'm a little bit more makeable about the structure, and we'll let it flow a little more naturally, I think. Officially, it's supposed to be an opening statement of 2 minutes each, or 1 minute, depending on what they want to do. Core argument of 8 minutes in length, a response to the core argument of the other party. Any questions we'll take at that point for a little bit, and then closing statements afterwards. That's the official outline, and we'll see how much we stick to it. I think the main point here, regardless of the points that are made and are being fought for on both sides, is to be able to perceive and to understand how B'nai Torah are able to disagree. Last year at Yom Iyun, Rav Tversky spoke about political discourse, and this is one of his main points, was the fact that, especially today in America, and Eretz Yisrael, Kal v'chomer, Allah has kind of a comment, which everyone's more proper to apply here, but the divide is extreme, and it seems that the deeper in Golos we get, the more polarized we become, and the bigger period seems to exist, and obviously the way that we get back to Geula is by creating a unity within all of Klal Yisrael, political ideologies and positions not being moneya, not holding it back. So, I guess the main topic of social media, if you guys want to make statements beforehand, I could ask you the question beforehand. Make the opening decisions beforehand, and then I'll come in with the questions that were like the guiding questions to give the main arguments, and then the responses afterwards. Is that okay?
Yeah.
You want to go first?
Yeah, so poskim and etzav brishis were born. Okay.
You're surprised if I said no, right?
Yeah, exactly. That would be great. The premise of the question for the debate was, is there ever an excuse to be on social media? That was the formulation if you guys saw it on the schedule. And the answer to that question is actually pretty clear, considering the fact that my Rebbe Ravaria Leibowitz is on Twitter. In fact, the Reform Shlita is on Twitter. Gadol mimeni b'chachmo v'minyan shel shadim. More experience, more wisdom than I do. The answer is a resounding yes. There clearly is some excuse to be on social media. There are valid reasons to be on social media. That's clear. If you were looking for some bloodbath of screaming at each other without recognizing any nuance or the other person's opinion, you could stick to the toxic echo chambers on social media and just listen to people who just scream at each other, never looking at the other side, never seeing what's great about the other side. The answer, obviously, is that there are valid reasons. So what am I really trying to argue today? What I'm trying to argue, I guess I can summarize in three different points. One, why am I not on social media? Why do I not use these platforms? I do use WhatsApp. I don't know if that qualifies. We could talk about that if people are interested in hearing. But why am I not on this? Why I think the vast majority of you probably should not be, and I'm going to try to argue why that should be the case. At least if I can't accomplish those two things, the third thing is if somebody, one of your friends, one of your family members, decides to drop these platforms and to not use social media anymore, not to dismiss him as some Haredi fanatic that doesn't know what he's doing and he's crazy and he doesn't understand how to use things in this world and how to be engaged with the world. Maybe he's a sophisticated modern person who rightfully thinks that this is not good for him, not good for his family, and not good for the world. And that's the reason why he's not going to use it. To at least respect the person who makes that decision, never, rachman atzlan, to mock or to try to question that decision when somebody makes that decision in a well-thought-out way. That's what I'm going to try to be arguing for today. That was just an opening statement that I wanted to make sure that we frame this in the right way.
Awesome. Great.
They asked for an opening statement before we get to the bulk of our argument, so I'll kind of scale back a little bit. I remember I was having a conversation with one of my talmidim probably about 7 or 8 years ago. And he asked me, like, Rebbe, what's the difference? If you had to put it down in one point between the difference between, like, yeshivish versus more modern. And I'm not sure exactly these categories, how to define each of them, but I did think there was something that came out in that conversation which I thought was very important, which is, how much are you willing to take a risk, and for what are you willing to take that risk? Meaning, is it worthwhile to take a risk? There's a lot. The more you're engaged in the world, the more you're open to the world, the more you want to learn from and give to the world, the more risky it is. It's a lot safer to be totally secluded, to be totally cut off. The question is, whenever, if ever, is it worthwhile taking a risk? So I think it boils down to two variables, and I'll show my best to give an example to what I think is a worthwhile versus not worthwhile risk. If you're walking by a house and there was a fire burning, and there was a baby inside, and you were 99% sure you're going to get out and save that baby, I think all of us would break into that house and jump in, go through the window, do what we can, and save that baby. 99% for a life of a baby, very, very, very worthwhile. However, if there was a 99% chance you were going to die, and instead of the baby, it was the baby's favorite toy, most of us would not break into that house because two variables change. Number one is it's a lot more dangerous. And number two is the reward, the upside, is far inferior. Those, I think, are the two major things that are worthwhile to think about. What do you possibly gain, and how risky is it? And therefore, if a person wants to, while you have a time, because I want to end up, you know, I went to, I'm sure some of the high schools you go to, secular college is a major debate. I don't want to overstep my boundaries in this conversation, but we'll give it a very extreme example. Let's say you go to a college with absolutely no Jews on any level, period whatsoever, and it's an average education. I can't imagine anyone saying, great idea. Simultaneously, and here comes my Zionistic side coming out, moving to Eretz Yisrael was a new culture for me. I plan on sending my kids to the army, which has certain hashkafic risks. But I think going to the army is a mitzvah sase daraisa. I think moving forward the country to a positive direction, which one day could bring the geula, is an unbelievably strong upside. And therefore, I believe there's a strong upside to be made. And I guess the question we're going to discuss today is, what are the potential upsides with social media, and how risky is it? I think those are the guiding factors that should help someone figure out in details whether it's appropriate for them, how much, or at all. That's opening.
Amazing. So I think we're really blessed to have such nuanced, you know, debaters or people on the panel. I don't know what the proper term for this is. But the questions are honestly much more black and white than the introductory statements. I think that's, you know, it's really to our benefit that we have such nuanced approaches so we can continue along those lines. But just for the sake of giving guiding questions, even if they're a little bit more extreme or less precise. The questions here are, is our goal to be mekadesh these apps? Are my tweets, statuses, or posts a kiyum of Talmud Torah? You know, assuming that there's Talmud Torah involved in those posts. Are people that I've never met Talmud is another one. As well, the role of sharing Torah on these platforms. I guess the third question kind of assumes an answer to the second question. But can there a real Rebbe Talmud relationship be cultivated and experienced through these means of social media and without ever having personal interactions, even with private messaging? It's not the same as interacting with this Talmud face to face or anything like that. So those are the main guiding questions. But again, I think even to continue along the nuanced points that were already made is even more beneficial. So I guess main arguments.
Whatever you
prefer. Go ahead.
So in terms of being mekadesh d'chol, I don't know if that's a halachic obligation or more of a hashkafic obligation, nor do I know the scope of how much should one try to be mekadesh d'chol. I imagine any chol you choose to be involved with would certainly require an element of being mekadesh that. Above and beyond, I don't know. But certainly anyone who's on social media, you'd want to use it as religiously and as much as a positive force as possible. It'd be that much more easy to justify someone who's on it anyway to be using it constructively and productively than negatively and in a damaging way. I would throw out there, could you imagine what the world would look like if there was no Torah on social media at all? Would it be better or worse? And it's tough to imagine. For me, it'd be better. How many people would leave social media if there was no Torah on it? I think the number is very few. How much Torah is spread in connection to Rabbanim, in connection to ideas of Torah, I think is an incredibly high number. And therefore, if you would ask me if all Jews would back off of social media tomorrow, would we gain more than we lose? Probably. Because it's totally irrelevant and just so far from what anyone who's holding in Metzius would expect. I do believe that the force of social media, the Torah social media world, is very beneficial. I want to spell out two more specific details as to what I think is the ultimate good. Number one is, and this is a question that Sam read off based upon a conversation I was having with Rav Shai Kamenetsky just a few days ago when we were preparing for this. And it hit me. We were outside the pool. We were just schmoozing. And he asked me, like, what are the pros? What are you going to say? And I was thinking to myself, like, there used to be a world called Frum Twitter. Maybe now it's called Frum X. I'm not sure exactly the new title or whatnot. Oh, you get the joke. It means you're with it. Like, not so far disconnected. And I think I'm not sure exactly who's made this world and who's not, but somehow I think I've made it into the Froom Twitter world, and I don't know if that's something to flex over or not, but maybe to mourn, but somehow I'm in that world. And I do believe there is a world of Froom Twitter. Peter Ravi Leibowitz is part of that world. There's probably many others. I'm not going to go through naming each one. Some of the non-Orthodox world, some of the more yeshivish world. Surprisingly, there's a strong Chabad presence in that, in the Froom Twitter world. I would think there probably are about 10,000 Jews on planet Earth who, inspired by Froom Twitter's messages, pictures, ideas, quotes, and whatever's going on out there. And those are 10,000 people who many of them probably would not have had a connection, certainly to the amount of Rebbeim they have a connection to, and some nothing at all. I think that's very, very positive. You know, how much can you have a kesher with a Rebbe you don't know? So obviously more, less than full, but not having any exposure, so more than zero. There was a very chashuv yeshiva, who I'm not going to mention, you'll see why, where one of the mashiachs got up and gave a shmooze. And he said, having a kesher with the Rebbe does not mean he even has to know who you are. He doesn't have to know your name. It's irrelevant. As long as you're benefiting from him, learning his Torah, gathering his information, appreciating his hashkafa, learning from his midos, looking at his tfisat olam, his perspective on the world, as long as you're gaining, so he knows your name, he doesn't know your name, that's all just about, you know, your ego, and like you get to say, oh, this Rebbe has a kesher with me. This particular Mashiach who gave the shmooze, I think, is 100% right about 50% of the story and 100% wrong about the other 50%. There definitely is a responsibility for a Talmud to get to know a Rav, and the famous line for that is found in Pirkei Avos, Aseh Lecha Rav, which placed the entire onus, the entire burden of responsibility on the Talmud. And so much of it is learning from our Rebbeim, getting to feel connected to them, and I want to just build that before I share the other side. There's a Drashas HaRan, which speaks to me very much on a couple levels. I'll tell you the Ran wants to know, why do we go to Kivrei Tzadikim to daven? Why do we go to, you know, the Kivrei Avos in Chevron? And why do we go to Rachel Imenu in Beis Lechem and why do we go to Rabbi Akiva and all the Tanoim and Amoraim and Rishon? We go to Kivarim and we daven the, you know, Beis Yosef and the Ramak and Yisrael. So he answers fascinatingly. He says, just like you're supposed to be connected to, you know, to be dovid, v'dov kabo, you can't be dovid to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is eish ochle, so it's rather you connect to G'dolei Torah, Rabbanim, etc. Just like when they're alive, you're supposed to connect to Chachmei HaMesorah and G'dolei Torah, so too when they're dead. And that Rambam puzzled me for years, because I always understood like the Rambam. The Rambam writes both in Hilchos Deis and Sefer HaMitzvah, that the goal of connecting to Rabbanim is to learn from their actions, to watch how they interact with people, to watch how they treat their family, to look at their midos, to observe. I find every summer I come here and watch Rav Schechter and other Rebbeim, but Rav Schechter the most, and, you know, understandably so. I just watch how respectful he is to everyone who comes over and asks him. Everybody sits down to learn for 2 hours, spends 6 minutes learning, and an hour and 54 minutes answering the same questions he's answered literally over 100 times. With sensitivity and kindness. Oh, very interesting. But that's not what the Ran had in mind, for had it be what the Ran had in mind, it would have only been applicable to when he's alive. In other words, going to the Ramak's, going to the Beis Yosef's Kever, going to wherever you're going, you're not learning from their actions. Maybe you tell a story, but you could tell that story anywhere. And the answer hit me one Motzi Shabbos. I was with Rav Ari Halu, who's a Rebbe in Yeshiva Kotel as well. The two of us were in Chevron, in Maris Machpelah, one Saturday night from Lav Malka. And I walked over to him and said, you know, I got Pshat in the Ran. He said, what Ran am I referring to? Told Naran, maybe he knew it, I don't even know, but I definitely, without me sharing him the details, he had no idea what I was talking about. I said, tonight I felt closer to Avraham and Sarah than I've ever felt in my life. You go to the place and you just feel connected. I didn't listen to his drasha. I didn't watch her interact with her family. Sometimes you can really connect, and that's what Naran has in mind. The goal is not just to learn from their actions, but etzem the istabkus, the ischabus. Just connecting alone has deep value. And therefore, I think that exists on social media. I was inspired by many of the other from Twitter people, some things they say, videos they put out, comments they make, quotes they've heard, stories they've told, videos they've posted. I personally walked out feeling more connected. I know these people more, and it's totally not a replacement. Here comes the other side. And why I think this Mashgiach was only halfway. It's totally not a replacement for a Rebbe. There's also responsibility for a Rebbe to invest in his Talmidim, Talmidim Halbei, to establish, to erect Talmidim and encourage them to go out and do good things. the relationship, like every relationship, really should have two sides to it. It's not a replacement for a Rebbe, but it certainly is more than zero. And if you walk out with 50%, that's above zero, there's certainly value in that. I know many people who feel connected through YU Torah, which is not the same thing, but through many different social media avenues, mostly Twitter and Facebook, because frankly, those are the two that maybe have an OU on them on some level. You know, difficult to imagine Snapchat and TikTok being as useful, even Instagram, which is kind of gvuli, as useful as Twitter. You know, there's just much with, you know, there's YouTube. I've learned so much from Rav Manas Friedman, who's one of the Chabad from YouTubers out there. I've heard hours and hours of shiur while I was driving from, in different perspectives, in Chassidus and Chabad. And I found myself, again, I never met the man, but I feel I was influenced by him more than zero, significantly more than zero. And therefore, is there room to use it the right way? Absolutely. Absolutely. The last point I want to make, just in terms of moving forward, and here's a little bit about my dream, my vision, my, I don't call it my mishichistic side, because that sounds too Chabad. I'm not like a Chabadnik legamre. Even 95% of me is not Chabad. I try my best to learn from every single person and inculcate as much as I can.
Twitter pictures are geschmack.
But I do believe that how Klal Yisrael is going to get its message to the world in terms of one of the major aspects of Geula and the coming of Mashiach is not just the Beis HaMikdash. That's certainly one of the major simanim, but I think the house and the building represents a culture and an ideology and a lifestyle for the world. The house represents it more than is what we're building towards. In other words, the Beis HaMikdash will be more on Tisha B'Av. We're missing that building, but it's reflective of the lifestyle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his values being educated and taught and inspired. You know, inspiring the world and inspired by the world. And if you want to talk about the most effective ways of getting messages out to the world, I definitely believe social media is up there. I believe the woke movement took advantage of it. I believe the woke movement is a terrible movement, by and large. There's a couple of redeeming qualities, but 99% of what they do, if not more, is I think, antithetical to Torah and damaging at many levels. That's not my topic, but I'll share that perspective nonetheless. And I think the woke movement would be a fifth, if not a hundredth, of what it is without social media. And just using the point is, social media, in addition to what it's already been doing, the potential that it has to get our message out there to the world, especially when we're moving towards the Dor Shel Geula or Ikvat HaMashiach, depending on which community you come from, which phrase you want to use, I definitely believe that there's a lot to be invested in it. And I believe that if we can use it the right way, the roof, the sky is above and beyond what we've been dreaming with already. Okay, that's what I have to say on that.
So just to respond, I thought the question 2, 3, 4, absurd. I agree with a lot of what Ravorn just said. I don't think there's any denial that I was scrolling through his Twitter page last night.
Great debate.
Yeah, exactly. just to like prepare for this. And I was getting teary. I looked at the geschmack pictures of Rav Schechter and Willig and Motorboat. And what is shot with that picture? It's amazing. It's awesome stuff. It's great. Rav Ari Leibowitz, like especially during the times during COVID when I was in lockdown and my wife would show me certain tweets that he was putting out, it really picked up my day. It made a big difference. I'm not denying the positive elements of the way that certain tzaddikim and talmidei chachamim are using it and of getting that message out there, for sure. Now is my turn to be a little more negative. I'm going to sound fundamentalist. I'm going to sound really crazy. This is what I'm really going to attack on question number one, the mekadesh d'chol, of is it our job to go in there and start sanctifying that which is mundane? Social media is not chol. And this is not from a Haredi perspective. This is not from a right-wing perspective. My Rebbe when it comes to social media is Jonathan Haidt. He's an atheist. He happens to be a Yid. But he's an atheist. He doesn't believe, will not mention the word God in anything other than trying to talk about positive qualities of religion that things contribute to society. He was almost prophetic, ironically. When it came to this whole social media, already in 2011, 2012, he was starting to raise warning bells about what is going on with American society. It's tearing apart the fabric of our society. Why are my students not able to listen to a single point they don't already agree with? He's a professor at NYU. He was already deeply disturbed by this. He did a ton of research into it. He wipes the floor with everybody who tries to argue with the research. He has a bunch of colleagues also working this with him. Let's just talk about the objective statistics. Depression and anxiety are skyrocketing, especially for kids your age. Kav HaChomer for your sisters or your age, but even it's worse for boys also. Self-harm, suicide, these are things that exploded, specifically when you combine social media, including Facebook, with smartphones. Before smartphones was as much of a problem, it's really when smartphones, when it became every single waking hour I have access 9, 10, 11 hours on my devices. You can look at the amount of time you guys are using it on NCSYCola, and I'm sure that number is way too high. And you guys suffered as a result. Why? Tons of reasons we could talk about it. It's just objective statistics in terms of what's going on. And I think people say this. It's, again, something that you may have heard, but it should terrify you. It should be something that kind of you think about all the time, which is, how are these multi-billion dollar companies making their money? Where is it all coming from? You're not paying for the platform. I'm not. So why is it so profitable? They're pouring billions of dollars into development to make these products so good. When I say good, that means so time-consuming. Where's all the money coming from? And the answer is, they have a product, and they're selling their product to advertisers, to influencers, meaning people trying to influence who you vote for, who you're attracted to, what types of things you want to buy. And the product is you, your time. The products were designed, 2010 specifically, is when Facebook changed its model, that you were no longer the customer, you're more the product, where they hook you in, they grab you, try to consume as much of your time as possible. Never mind that you have a family. Never mind that you have sleep that you need. Never mind that you have homework assignments that you need to take care of. Their job is to keep you on that platform for as long as possible, humanely possible, and then be able to show advertisers, this is the amount of hours that we have them on. That's for every single platform that we're basically talking about here, Snapchat, TikTok. That's the business model. That's the way it works. It's the way it operates. Which means that we're being consumed into a product. Our lives are being dominated by something that is not being created for our benefit. It's not necessarily being created. Now, can you use it, the Tova? Like I said before, for sure. I think there's a big difference between Reiner Leibowitz and Rav Horn and somebody who's 15 or 16 who's using these platforms. Which leads me to my next point, I think is really important to talk about. We always like to talk about being Mekadosh Zahol. There's a story I love to share all the time about the Chiddush HaRim. I think it captures it so well. And Chiddush HaRim, Chassidish HaRebbe, the first gay Rebbe, but he came from Kutsk. Kutz was not into like this like fake Narish guy where we talk about being Mekadosh Zachol when really all you care about is yourself. And there's a famous Meisr. There was somebody sitting at his table on Shabbos, and he's every single spoonful of food that he takes, oh, Chavot Shabbos Kodesh. Chavot Shabbos Kodesh. Every single spoonful that he takes, the Chavot Shabbos Kodesh. And the Chushurim is getting more and more irritated as this goes on. At a certain point, the Chushurim bangs on the table, takes a spoonful of cholent, the Chavot mine boy, the Chavot my stomach. Come on. Are you actually being Malin Itzel Kedusha? One of the most abused Kabbalistic concepts that's out there. When you're on the third platter of sushi, it's hard to argue that it's all about Hashem and it's all about bringing Kedusha to this world. Are you in control? Rav Horn is in control. Rav Aryeh Leibowitz is in control. Are we using these platforms, or are these platforms using us? And when you're not, very hard to argue that you're being Mekadosh something when it's totally using you and not the other way around. I'm sorry to say this, but you could ask your Madrichin, sitting in a shir NYU with Gedolei Torah, Gedolei Olam, Rav Schachter, Rav Rosenzweig, you sit in the back and you will see several B'nai Torah, sometimes your Madrichin themselves, on their devices, they're on their computers, and they're taking notes, and they're on checking Twitter. They're checking their different social media whatever accounts. That's what they're doing during this. I'll be very honest with you, I don't think there's something that a Ben Torah can do that's worse than that. Before 10 Jews, to a Gadol Ador is saying some Torah in front of you, and you're in front of other people, deliberately doing something else, and openly watching Narish Guy TikTok videos in the middle of a Shir of Gadol Olam. I don't know what I'm going to say for your Neshama, Achar Me'ev Esrim. I don't know what Michal can say for you. There's nothing worse. But you know what the defense is? They're not in control. They're mamish addicted. And it's not just undergrad students. I walked into a speaker class given by one of my rabbis. Gevaldik machshava being taught in the classroom. Sam probably can figure out what I'm talking about already. It's amazing stuff being given over. I wanted to test it out because people were saying that they weren't interested. It wasn't engaging enough. It was boring. So I sat in the back of the room. And these are your madrichim. Many former NCSYCola madrichim, current NCSYCola madrichim, smusmachim, the rabbanim of the future, the ones who are going to go out. And they are glued to Narishkeit on their screens instead of the godless of machshava that's being given over to them in this classroom. I don't know what to say. I'm terrified for that young rabbi who goes out to the field and now thinks he's being Mekadosh Zachol by then spreading his Torah, which he doesn't have because he never listened to a word of Schechter said, now spreading it to the world, to every single person on Twitter. I'm very nervous about people who kid themselves into thinking that they are in control, using things Latova, when really they are a tool and they are being used and they're not in control. By the way, I went over to the Rebbe after, and the Rebbe asked me, like, why did you come? Because I took the class like 5 years ago. I said I wanted to see. Guys were telling me that it wasn't engaging enough. He's like, I can tell that the guys are doing this. It's also hurting your Rebbe's feelings, and your Rebbe does have feelings, by the way. He can tell when you're doing something else on your device, and he actually does have Chalishas Adas, not because he's a Bal Gaiva, but because he actually, like, cares about teaching you, and he thinks he's not engaging enough when you're not listening. He thinks maybe I'm not interesting enough. He has to, like, comfort himself about that. It's horrible. It's horrible. It's really tearing you out. The last point I was just going to make when it comes to this is, I think, another impact that social media has, and it really relates to, I'll say it this way, one of the guys in my shir, I love all of you. Some of them are here. I mean, seriously. I respect you guys a lot more than I respected myself, potentially more than I respect myself now, certainly when I was your age, for sure. But one guy said to me openly, I appreciated the honesty, that Rav Schefter is boring. That was the lashon that he used. Pemala. What I translated that as, oh, my brain is so saturated with dopamine that I can't afford to listen to a single cent of real Torah content. Rav Shamshon von Hirsch was speaking to Reform Jews in Germany. He came, there was only 11 families in Frankfurt. Lopiansky spoke about to us about how Frankfurt fell apart. He came, 11 from families. By the time he was finished, there were hundreds of families that were mamish reformed. They were eating treif, mamish, started coming to him. They would sit and listen to him for hour and a half, speak. And they said he was like a Navi Hashem, and they would listen to him. And nowadays, Rav Soloveitchik used to give 3-hour tshuva drashas in Yiddish, which was a language that many people couldn't even fairly understand, if not understand at all. And people would sit there and they would gain, and they would. And nowadays, if it doesn't have that punch, it's not about attention span as much as it's got to have that pump. It's got to have that punch to it. Otherwise, it's just not interesting. Which is why guys are saying, be like, you're gonna get really intense, right? Like the vein's gonna start throbbing in the middle of the debate. No, not against Tom Hukam, the statue of Reform, and no, not when there's points of nuance to be made. That's not the type of context. And if you need that to listen to somebody, I'm sorry, you are so saturated in social media and in the need to have everything be sharp and right away catch your attention, and it needs to have that chop right away in order to get you involved. You can't appreciate real Torah content when it's screaming at you in the face. And it's something that really scares me, and I think it's influencing everybody. I don't think this is just a thing of certain segments of our society. Like I'm trying to say, in the core of the base medrash of the modern Orthodox community, I think it's eroding at the core. I think that really this really is an issue that we have to be dealing with. So what I get nervous about is people trying to say, we're using these things for good. I don't think we're in control. I think it's really negatively impacting us. The objective statistics that are coming out in terms of research are showing that. And it shows in the classroom. It shows on what's going on in guys' computer screens in the middle of shiur. It shows in all of those things. Chevra, I wanted to say this. I wanted to apologize to you. Reform generation does not have to apologize for this. My generation has to apologize for creating products that parasitically feed off you and basically sell you to the highest bidder. I'm sorry for the times that you post a video on TikTok and nobody cares and nobody's paying attention, and you have that empty gaping hole in the center core of your being because you feel lonely and that nobody cares about you. I am sorry about that. It's not fair. It's not fair when you post something and you don't get that laugh out loud emoji from the entire chevra, and when you're cyberbully and all these things that exploded under social media's watch. It's not fair to you. It's almost cannibalistic in terms of what my generation did. With the full knowledge, Facebook knew this stuff was going on. Meta. They knew this stuff was going on for years and were hiding the data. Now they're pumping millions of dollars to try to convince everybody that it's not true. Just came out with a new study. It's not creating polarization. It's not creating all these things, ignoring all the data that they themselves generated over the course of years. I'm sorry about that, but you do have a choice. You don't have to be a product. You don't need to be the person whose life is being influenced heavily by these things. You can choose to disengage. And almost statistically, clinically, it's proven that you'll have more self-esteem. You'll be happier. You'll feel more connected to the actual human relationships in which you have. You'll be a happier, better, more fulfilled person with more time to accomplish greater things with the incredible potential I know every single person in this room has.
Amazing. Rehorn, do you want to do responses to that? To go back with the responses, or I have my own thoughts to push back on both parties. Whichever one they want to do.
I have a couple small points to make. Look, I'm afraid to take away that fire. That was great.
It's good.
Whatever you want. I'll go either way. Flexible. Whatever you think is best.
I think Rabbi can go first, and then Rabbi can respond.
So I'll reiterate by saying I'm inspired. Rabbi Schreier's flame and fire, it's really, it's good to see the Brent, and the Mitzvah, you guys should be inspired by that as well. I think a lot of what he said is correct. There is no doubt that the social media, the dopamine that goes to your head, it's like planned out, how to brainwash people and get them just on, you know, shooting them shots of dopamine and things along that nature. There's no doubt. There is it's not like me to speak this way, and it sounds unnuanced, but there is a powerful, I would say even borderlining evil force, which takes into account only how much money the social media platforms will make, totally disregarding the mental health of hundreds of millions of people. And I say that without exaggerating. not taking into account the mental health of hundreds of millions of people. And that's like a remarkably irresponsible and just selfish decision. So I'm not looking to pretend that the people running social media are tzaddikim. They haven't been said, and I believe that strongly. I do think some of the points are slightly over-exaggerated. I'm just going to scale back on some of them. There were people falling asleep in Shir and YU before they had social media. They were bored for generations. You know, the Gemara tells stories about Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim who were bored. You know, there's the Gemaras that talk about Amoraim who sat in Shir were bored. Being bored in Shir and not following what the Rebbe said and having high school kids who can't keep up with Rav Schachter is not something to be proud of. But that took place for generations. When I was in yeshiva, there were people who struggled with depression. Not the same numbers and not the same level. A lot of it's social media. A lot of it's also the wealth and materialism we come from. Some of it's the social norm. There's just different issues and different problems that come up. I'm not pretending social media is not a huge cause or the primary cause, but I don't think it's the only cause. If a Soloveitchik gives shiur for 3 years, you know, for 3 hours straight, 4 hours straight, they were remarkable shiur. 2,000 people showed up, but 1,000 of them didn't pay attention for the whole 4 hours straight. Yeah, it's easy to talk about, you know, what was took place in previous generations and you know, in Europe. And there definitely were advantages, but I don't want to mislead. I do think that, you know, and I'm not worried about the next generation of Rabbanim going out who can have different challenges than my generation had, and maybe different generation than your generation, could be even the generation in between there. Is social media a challenge? Absolutely. That having been said, there's more boys learning the YU-based medrash than your time, more in your time than in my time, and more in my time than the generation before me. Partially because the community is growing, but partially because the Hasmada is growing, and there are a lot of reasons to be optimistic and positive, the connection they have to Rebbeim all over the world, and things along the nature. I guess I'm not saying that there aren't tremendously large red flags, and please don't lose the severity in the nuance. That having said, you know, Klai Yisrael is not heading for a catastrophe. American Jewry is stronger than it's ever been. The modern Orthodox community is stronger than it's ever been. The up-and-coming Rabbanim are showing more potential than as far as in my history, and I've seen the modern Orthodox community grow for 25, 30 years, and I'm more optimistic about the next generation than any other one, and I just want to kind of put that into perspective. Two small points. Number one is, I do believe it's very addicting. You said, not for me. I don't find myself addicted to it, but I do find more than zero. I don't think addiction is a yes or no. There's a whole spectrum of in between, and I find myself on social media. Sometimes I tell myself I'm going to get off at 4:30, and I look, it's 4:32, I say, one more. And then, you know, you watch YouTube, and they put a whole bunch of Yetzer Haras at the bottom over there, intentional, and there's strategies to do that. And I'm not saying 20 years ago, and everyone came to Seder on time because it was 3:30 or 4 o'clock. People found other things to get distracted by, but this is definitely, that was something, and, you know, it's you know, sometimes it's the wrong decision, sometimes it's not the right decision to spend a few minutes more on it, and, you know, I can talk about my own personal life in general, but I want to pretend that I'm immune from any type of addiction. I'm not immune from anything. I do see myself as a rabbi and confident enough in my Avodas Hashem to teach Torah. That having been said, don't pretend I'm perfect or flawless or whatever Yetzer Hara you guys have. I'm fighting it on my own level, but I'm not perfect in that, you know. Rabbi Liebowitz says, I don't even know. But I do think the blindness to addiction is important. I'll throw out one more thing as well. I don't know the answer to this. I do believe what you said at the end about, like, feeling lonely when you don't get likes and feeling happy when you do get likes. I'm not sure. I once heard someone give a Musa Shmuz about liking other people's Facebook and Instagram and Twitter stuff. It's a kiyam and vahavtoecha kamocha. Fascinating. Maybe you're right. I don't know. If that's really what you want, I'm saying, if you want a glass of water, you want to be treated respectfully, maybe. I don't know. On the other hand, like, it may also be like a lifna either. So it's a fascinating, like, halachic, hashkafic conflict over here, which on the one hand it's vahavtoecha kamocha, on the other hand it's lifna either, because I don't know the right answer to that, but it's an interesting thought that I wanted to put on the table as well.
Sure. Just starting from the end, maybe we'll open up the questions in a second. So, in terms of that, totally agree. In terms of, I wouldn't feed into the phenomenon more. It's more about finding the ways to actually create connection that isn't generated by Facebook to generate revenue. Reaching out to that person who nobody laughed at his joke, maybe personally, and asking him how he's doing, and actually caring about him the next day in school, and going over to him and asking him how his day's going. Actually giving that personal attention that people desperately need and crave that they're not getting, I think it's very kedai. Like, being even, I would say, even more sensitive to the point of trying to be what we should be in person instead of living in a virtual world. I think it's something that's like a kedaya achrayus instead of just giving a like actually going over and expressing that you like somebody or that you care about him, even if you don't like him. But I think those are things that are important to be able to do. If I gave the impression that the modern Orthodox world is headed for catastrophe, not intending to do that, although I do think many elements of American society are headed for a huge, like, this is where Jonathan Haidt gets a little bit like doomsday prophet, almost Jeremiah style of Tower of Babel, and we broke something that will never be created again. American society went through plenty of political corruption, literally stuffing ballots, beating people up who were voting for the other side. That was happening in the 10s, 20s, and 30s all over the place. Prohibition, crime skyrocketing. Things like this happened. Reverend Zweig always says, Civil War, right? I was thinking with the 1900s, but yeah. Reverend Zweig always says that anybody who says, like, our generation is experiencing something that we've never experienced before, he says either is being very hyperbolic or doesn't know anything about history. There are different sensitivities and nuances. Social media is certainly something that the world has never dealt with before. But I'm not trying to give the impression of catastrophe. I do sincerely think that almost every single person in this room, I can't say because I don't know all of you, would deeply benefit from severely disconnecting, spending more time with family, hanging out with friends, even playing Madden on PlayStation instead of being on social media platforms and being absorbed into that world and hooked in and being wrung out for as many hours as they can get. I think those are things that almost everybody in this room would benefit from, and that's really what I'm trying to put emphasis on. And I do think, and this is maybe where I'm being a little cynical, it's due to the years I was studying in NYU. I love the guys in NYU. And one-on-one, they're amazing. The decisions that they're making, Bizman Azeh, sorry, Sam, I include you in this, but they're extremely impressive young men. The decisions that they're making, the sacrifices that they're willing to make, the amazing amount of time that's going on, not NYU only, I'm sure many other places, just where I was for years, until this past year I was there for years. But I am a little worried. I am a little worried. I have noticed a drop-off in the qualities of the chaburas being given by guys. I do notice that guys won't sit down to write an article anymore. They're not willing to pick their teeth on Lashon Rabbanon anymore. There used to be editors for Beis Yitzchak. There are no editors for that. This is all changes that have happened in the last 4 or 5 years. I'm not trying to be alarmist. I'm not trying to say the world is ending. But I think we're missing something, and I think we could inject that back by being more cognizant of how we use these tools, whether we're being used by the tools, if that makes sense.
I feel bad. I'm just going to hope I left over 30 seconds. Sure. One more point, and you know, if you want to say something afterwards, just keep it easy.
Right.
Very flexible here.
One of the biggest things we have to learn how to do is handle being bored better. When you get bored for 10 seconds, boom, right to social media. There's a difference between making a conscious effort of going on and getting bored and not letting yourself control yourself. I'll take it one step forward, if you don't mind. I want to speak honestly and openly. I'm going to ask everyone just to kind of like put a mature mindset effort, like 30 seconds. Most of the struggles people have with pornography on the internet is not because they have sexual arousal. It's because they're bored and don't have any other way to handle it. We, as a generation and as a community and as individuals, have to learn how to handle being bored better. Sorry.
I would just add to that 100%. Also, emotional emptiness. A lot of times, at the end of the day, you're emotionally empty. Somebody said something that wasn't nice to you. You had a rough day. Study hard for a test, didn't get a good grade. You're going to come back and you're going to have that hole in you're going to feel something that needs to be filled. And a lot of times we turn to these types of things to fill these holes and these voids, and we do need to learn healthy ways of doing it. I like to tell my WD that there are times I come home and I'm miserable, I feel terrible about myself, it was a rough day, and what I want to do is, my thing used to be like reading Wikipedia pages. That was like my guilty treat of like going through different Wikipedia pages. And at a certain point, it started becoming a type of thing. I would like stand on Wikipedia black hole for like 3 hours. I actually got a lot of chesed. There's a major Maverick Soto on social media who told me that that's what he does when he gets really, really depressed. So, but it's very right.
Wasn't me, but I do it too.
Right, right. It's better to just go to sleep. I said I just go into bed and I'm miserable and I'm not feeling good, and I wake up and I feel so good in the morning after a full night's sleep, and I'm able to go back and I'm able to be a good father for my kids. Those are things that, like, I think it's important to be able to accept those negative feelings, maybe process them with a friend, with a parent, with a sibling. It's great. Sometimes not even. I don't have anybody to talk to right now, just to be able to relax. Talking to HaKadosh Baruch is always the best thing to do. And say, like, I'm going to feel better in the morning. And the ability to be able to just go to sleep without pouring yourself into that black hole and your neurotransmitters getting off and lack of sleep and the vicious cycle that creates.
I mean, I think those two points are very much related, the boredness and the emotional emptiness. A lot of times they play into each other. The more bored you are, the more empty you feel, and the more empty you feel, it's because you don't have what to do. Okay, fine. So I guess only like 10 minutes left. So for Rabbi Horn, my question is that one of the questions. We'll see how much time we have. But a lot of what Rebbe said is definitely true, although it requires a degree of consciousness and thoughtful use of social media, of the internet, which, you know, obviously doesn't exist for when parents give their phones to their children to get them to stop crying at ages, like, you know, maybe through 5 years old. There's some point in between 5 and, like, you know, 18, or maybe, if we're maybe 20, you know, where maybe things start to click a little bit more, and that's a possibility. But how do you deal with that for Talmidim? Is it very much personal based on that? In terms of Hergel, people are using it just because they've been accustomed to using it, weaning them off of it as an inherent value, and then, you know, maybe introducing it back on consciously. And in terms of just, like, even from the get-go, like, what's the point where you say, where is the point where you say that this is now an acceptable thing for you to be, you know, looking at Torah through this lens of social media? I mean, from the producer, it makes a lot of sense. From the consumer, that's I think that's where, first of all, that's where the masses are found, and that's where the majority of the issues really rise. So I'm curious on your thoughts on that.
I'll share with my own personal thoughts in a minute, but I don't claim to be an expert in this field. In other words, I do feel I have somewhat to say in the hashkafa topic of social media, but in terms of dealing with addiction and dealing with emotional emptiness, like, I do believe that the world of psychology and the frum world of psychology really has a responsibility to step it up and have a louder voice in this area. It's shocking how quiet they've been over the last 5 years in terms of offering solutions and suggestions and strategizing. Like, I would love to hear, I'm not looking to point to any particular fingers to anyone, but the leading Torah psychologist people, and there are numerous people who we all look to for Torah psychology guidance, to have much more specific pieces of advice in this particular area. So if I have nothing to say, at least I'm a good company. You know, that having been said, it could be the dust has not settled enough to have a solid answer, but I do believe we're looking for the Torah psychology leaders to give us hadracha, and I feel like, you know, we're still looking. I think there's two or three things specifically that I would do. Number one is, 2 minutes. Number one is, there's this app where you can put on your phone, and instead of all the colorful apps, everything's black. I forgot what it's called. I want to get it on if I can figure out.
It's on what iPhones is the setting.
Someone could show me how to do it. I'd love to get that on my phone afterwards. I have to figure out how to do that. But, like, it's a lot less addicting when it's, the dopamine shot is less, number one. Number two is just understanding where it comes from. It's like a drug. You know, when you're high on drugs, it feels great, and then you have a strong low, and the only way you fill that up is to give yourself another shot, another injection of that. It's all just based on dopamine. It just replaced the word drugs with social media. That's how it works. Knowing it, I think, helps a little bit. Setting yourself clear boundaries. You want to put, like, setting times, an hour on this particular social media, 2 hours, whatever it is. Two more small things. Number one is, I have this little thing on my phone, sorry, quickly, called Quasito. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it incorrectly. I can see, like, each of the apps my kids are on all day long. So I can see what my kids press into your Chrome. I can see which apps they open up, where, how much time they spend on each one, which I find, where also where they are geographically. That we don't use so much, but just, like, to give them a gauge. Lastly, there was a Talmud years ago who struggled with, I'm sure he's not the only one, who struggled with pornography on the internet, and every time he would go to a pornographical site, I would get a WhatsApp about that or an email about that updating me. There's very little about Yiras Shemayim and a lot about Yiras Bnei Adam, but myself and his mother got it every time he went on. So I can't say he went on zero, but I could say, I gotta believe the number has shrunk in drastically, you know, when it's public and known, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know if that helps at all, but those are some of the suggestions I'd make. And again, I would look to the professional world for more guidance in hadracha. After all, that's their job and it's expertise.
Okay. For Ruben, just one question, although it has to be very brief because we have to press the, you know, closing statements. But one of the things that...
take as much time as you want. I have no
one of the things that Rabbi Horn focused on a lot in his initial, not the initial statement, but the one right afterwards, those things, was the idea of being able to form a kesher. Okay, the points that Rabbi made were very, very nuanced, which is why this is almost like... The question is, it's almost arguing the other side, but in a way which is interesting.
Which I agree with.
So Rabbi Horn spent a lot of time speaking about the ability to form a kesher, or, you know, you have the inspiration, or you can appreciate some of the content that's posted by certain curators. There's a benefit to that. You know, even if it's not a seilach harav in the classical sense, it's not a replacement, but it could definitely, you know, complement it well. So I'm curious on Rebbe's take towards the differences between, I think there's there's the headline culture, which is the fact that things can be presented with a headline from a curator, and his implications, what he means to be conveying, are one thing, what the consumer takes out of it is right. something else, right. and how that differs perhaps from the world of regular Sfarim, and even just the connections that are made to Mechabrim of the past. The way that we relate to Rebbeim who are currently alive, posting on social media, you know, that should be like the same dynamic of a relationship where we like if I'm reading, you know, Ramchal, do I call the Ramchal my Rebbe the same way that I would call someone I've never met but on social media my Rebbe? The difference is in the similarities between those two types of relationships, Sfarim versus social media posts. Although it's a big question with a minute.
It's all good points. Like, look, the Shavuos Yaakov already paskin that Sfarim was Manazar or Rebbeim. The Rav used to take that really seriously. He would talk about as if you're Chayim Misa, if you pass him without consulting with your Sfarim. We should feel like Masor is alive. We should feel like Talmidei Chachamim or Mamish sitting in front of us. That's what the Rav beautifully spoke about at that Sudas Pinyon Aben. I think it was Pinyon Aben or Bris. I don't know which one it was. But
you can find it online.
It's on YouTube.
Why
you yeah.
Why
you talk probably. But it's good. You should feel like those personalities are alive. So I agreed. How do I have a connection with Ryan Lopiansky? I became addicted to his app. He has an app. And I listened to him a ton. I became a virtual Talmud. But I also recognized that I was missing a huge part without having that personal connection, which is why now I try to go to Zoom Shiurim whenever he speaks in person. I try to make sure to drive him down. As Warren said, just because you learn a lot of the Torah and you might understand the Hashkafas Olam of the Rebbe, there's a huge element, even understanding the Rebbe, of being Mishamishim, of knowing who he is, having those personal interactions with him, and also him knowing you and being able to provide you with proper guidance, and also just appreciate the Torah more. The Kesher becomes all the stronger. A lot of the reasons for what the Justice Rabbi is describing in terms of that Chibur, that Kesher.
Rav Lubiansky, he's Imam Shinvest in every person he talks to. Is that just,
it's amazing, it's amazing. It's amazing. So I think Why Torah, Rav Ryan Lopiansky's app, I recommend all these things. I recommend all the content that Rav Horn and Rav Leibowitz post on their statuses, whatever it's called. I don't know everything. But the point, I will say this, I have seen other people who would be considered to be part of this world that I don't think their content is necessarily worthwhile. This is a little, it might be that I'm, again, for maybe somebody who's 15, maybe it is worthwhile, maybe it's better than what they would see otherwise. But I think we have to be very careful. There's a famous article from Emanuel Feldman where he wrote about don't put tefillin in a brown paper bag. It's a beautiful expression about how depressed he was when he saw Christian theologians writing in beautiful publications, and the language was so poignant and so, and like, we're like yeshivishisms and like Yiddishisms, and we have like all this like Hamishkeit going on in our Torah publications, and he bemoaned like we should have better a beautiful tefillin zekel to hold our beautiful Torah. We have beautiful tefillin, it's mehudar, so put in a beautiful tefillin zekel. People love quoting that article. A lot of times I feel like we're stuffing newspaper into a beautiful tefillin zekel. You got to make sure that the tefillin's mahadron the mahadron. You have to make sure that the tefillin is kosher, mahadron first, and then make sure it's not stuffed with Comedy Central, and then you can make it into something that's real and of real content. When it's coming from people of real Torah stature and real Torah content, it's amazing. It's gewaldic. Other times we might be even feeding into more negative phenomena. I don't know. I will just mention, like, I was misspelled from this when, not that I think he's the person to be misspelled from, in all levels, especially because I'm from New York. Tom Brady, when it was before one Super Bowl, he was interviewed, and they asked him a lot of questions about pop culture, of what was going on. He had zero clue what was going on, almost anything. And people were sharing this video, and nobody was scoffing, certainly nobody was scoffing. More of it was like this respect for, like, total focus, like, whoa, amazing. And then when it comes to the Torah world, if somebody's like that, like, oh, you're like locked away in your closet, you have no idea what's going on in the world. Certain things you have to know what's going on in the world. I do try to read. I want to make sure I know what's going on. I want to make sure that I understand what's going on in the lives of my talmidim and what's going on in the lives of my children and in the general world. But like this, like, insistence, you have to be holding every single little tidbit and how everything needs to be brought into Torah and every reference to every musician and every this. I think that's like a little, that's sometimes a little over the top, and that's why it sometimes has to be catered a little more carefully to make sure that we have beautiful tefillin that's in the Mahadra.
Okay, amazing. If you really want to make closing statements for like Mamish, like a minute each.
Yeah, do you want me to make one? Sure. Okay. I'll just say that I think the decisions you make now are going to define who you'll be in 10, 15 years from now. The type of father that you're going to make, the type of husband that you're going to be. There's a scary story that recently was going on where kids in third grade were asked to draw something that represents their parents. So the particular speaker was making fun how she became a laundry basket. Like, that's the way her third grader decided to depict her. She's like, I think I'm a little more than that. But every other kid in the class drew a smartphone, which is like, that is scary, my friends. That's really bad. That's really bad. These are younger mothers. These are people who grew up in my generation. your generation is going to be the same. Are you going to be in control of your life? Are you going to be a healthy, happy husband and father? Are you going to be a good Eved Hashem? Is a lot dependent upon the steps you take to take control of the technology that's designed to totally consume your life. And I think we have to be really careful with the decisions that we make and recognize that they have very long-term implications for who we're going to be. These are not the types of things that Talmid necessarily kick. It's not the type of thing that you flip out in Israel, you come back, and you've kicked it, because we are nuanced, and we don't think that you should necessarily totally disconnect from the world. But the decisions that we make are very much going to have implications for who you're going to be in 10 to 15 years from now. And I want you to think about what you want your third grader to draw of you when it comes to these things, and what that picture should represent, and what type of quality time you want to be spending with them, and how often we do get distracted, and that phone does come out when the five-year-old is tugging at your shirt and asking for your attention. I think it should be something that scares us. You guys are mature enough, I think, to be able to handle that type of thought.
I would just say that if you fail and you screw up with your cell phones more than you'd like to, and you find yourself making the same mistakes over and over and over again, you should know most people who sin find themselves with the same sin over and over and over again. It doesn't justify you shouldn't be more heter. There's numerous gemaras that talk about how you shouldn't be more heter and say, oh, it's okay. Simultaneously, you should feel bad, but not bad enough that you like beat yourself up to the point where like you're damaged. It's important not to pretend mistakes are okay. And maybe more important in our generation, not to allow the mistakes to break our confidence and break our self-esteem. I was talking to a Talmud Chacham recently who said, you know, we should shift the entire chinuch focus on building up confidence and focus less on avoiding gaiva. The Talmudim don't need to hear avoiding gaiva. The Talmudim need to hear about confidence and building themselves up, you know, with security. I don't know if he's right, but you understand the point, which is don't beat yourselves up too much. Don't be disingenuous and blind as well.
Okay. Thank the Rabbi very much for their time and insight. The next panels are starting. There's one in here with Antora. There's one in the base medrash on Avoda. There's one in the Ramot Shapira base Knessus. And Gemilas Chasadim as well. We should take advantage of the opportunities.
Sounds tough.